Thanks for listening to Shift Your Spirits. I'm Slade Robertson. For over 12 years, I've been a professional intuitive and personal development blogger. I try to talk about spirituality with fewer hearts and flowers than most New Age blather. I also mentor emerging intuitives, psychics, and healers in a program called Automatic Intuition. It is Friday, June 15th, 2018, as I record this introduction. In last week's episode on parking angels, I went off on a tangent about a penny charm, which is a ritual I was taught to do to connect with the spirits in your house, especially when you first move into a new place. I'd originally written about this in one of my paranormal memoirs, and I said I might come back and do a recording of that story. So, in this week's segment, I impulsively decided to just jump in and go ahead and share that story with you while it's on my mind. That's coming up in just a little bit. And as always, there's an oracle segment at the end of the show, so be thinking about a question or a concern you have. Hold it in your mind, and I'll come back on after the final links and credits and leave you with that extra channeled message. This week in Divine Timing News, early in the podcast, I talked about synchronicity, and I decided to just sort of share synchronicity whenever it pops up, and whenever I experience a cool example of it. So something kind of cool happened on Monday. My friend Seth, who is, a listener of the show, he and I have about 20 years worth of practice sending each other messages on the wind. It's sort of our metaphor for telepathic communication. So anyway, I was leaving the gym Monday evening, and there was this really great breeze that was moving through the trees as I was walking the couple of blocks to my car. And it made me think of him, and I thought, oh, I wonder if he's sending me a message. And then I remembered that I had a picture that I intended to send to him. So to back up just a little bit, a few weeks ago, like 3 weeks ago now, I went camping, and while on my camping trip, I hung out with my friend Keith, and Keith had this bumper sticker on his truck that said, "Trust me, I'm a wizard," which I took a picture of, for reasons that may or may not be apparent to you. I had intended to send a picture of it to Seth, who would appreciate it and think it's funny. So, and a whole lot of other stuff to go along with that. So anyway, in the moment, as I'm walking Monday away from the gym, I thought, oh, Seth's sending me a message. Maybe I'll send him a message. So I pulled up the picture, trust me, I'm a wizard, and I texted it to him. And he immediately texted back and said that he was listening to the Lantern Bearer episode. He's listening to all the episodes of the show in order, but he's still a couple months behind. And I appreciate that because it's very hard to keep up with every single episode of a podcast. So he's a few months behind us. He's back in the winter still, listening to the Lantern Bearer episode. And apparently that is another episode where I have mentioned him by name. There's a few people that I mentioned by name multiple times, and will probably continue to do so. So you're getting to know a little bit about who some of the most important people are to me. Anyway, Seth is listening to the Lantern Bearer episode, and I did a shout out to him, a call out like I'm doing right now. And he said, right as I said his name to him, which is always kind of a weird experience to hear, you know, somebody talking to you out of a podcast, he gets the text from me with the picture, "Trust me, I'm a wizard." And of course, the Lantern Bearer episode is about the Merlin archetype, which is a wizard and also something that Seth and Keith both identify with because of me. So anyway, there was just this like cool synchronicity. I mean, why that moment? Why that very second when I had that picture, I'd been hanging on to it, I took it with the intention of sending it to him. So the fact that I took it in that moment where all those things intersected, beautiful. I love it when stuff like that happens. And in other synchronicities, remember I told you, I don't know, several weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that I had been just getting constant number sequences. Now, I can go back to certain periods in my life, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, where I went through these intense periods of seeing lots of number sequences. And at the time, it was a new thing to me, and I was just discovering that it meant something, and I was trying to communicate with my guides and be more intuitive and all the stuff you've heard me talk about 100 times now, right? And so it was an exploratory discovery situation, and it kind of dissipated over time, and it, you know, happens every once in a while or whatever. I see one here and there, and I always treat it as a message, and sometimes I look it up on my own blog, which, by the way, if you go to SladeRoberson.com/numerology, you see the basis with the links to all the different things that I've written about numerology. But on that page, the numerology page, there is a list of my interpretations for the number sequences. And I don't really know them by heart, so sometimes I have to look them up on my own website. But that's actually one of those pages that I look up on my own site more than any other. Well, anyway, so currently here in the last few months, I mean, this is like a couple of months now. I didn't go back and check the exact amount of time, because when I even told you guys about it, it had been going on for at least a few weeks at that point, 2 or 3 weeks. So I don't know, it's a couple months now. And the thing about it is, it's every single time that I check the time, it's every single time I get a triple number. I get a 333, a 222, a 444, 1111s, 1212s. I mean, every day, all day, 4 months. So, you know, if that's happening to you, I think, you know, what's my way of interpreting that? Well, overall, I just think it really means I'm very much in the right place in the right time. I'm very much aware of being who I am in this moment. There's a lot of things intersecting. My thoughts and intentions are intersecting with the outside world in a unique way. I'm just very aware of the fact that I'm plugged in. And I feel like these number sequences, when they happen in extremes like this, especially, that really is what they're telling you. It's just saying, you know what, the antenna is up, you're plugged in, you are cooking with gas. You know what I mean? So I'm really feeling myself, you know, I'm feeling like I'm really in the flow right now. And I do have some thoughts about, okay, what is that giving me a high five about? I do have some intentions and some things that I'm thinking about, some things I'm planning. And my general interpretation is that I am being green lighted constantly with what's going through my mind right now. And that sounds really good. So I'm going to go with that. Let's see what else in personal news this week. So I watched the movie I, Tonya, finally. I'm doing a Hulu trial month so that I could binge all the Handmaid's Tale episodes. And I timed it out so I could basically watch all 2 seasons in as little amount of time as possible, because I'm not sure how much I want to carry that energy around. If you want to hear me talk about it more, I've been posting about it on Facebook. But anyway, the point is, I, Tonya is on Hulu right now. It was a movie that I wanted to see. It's about Tonya Harding. It's kind of a biopic. It's a dark comedy. I think Allison Janney may have won Best Supporting Actress for playing her mom. She was at least nominated. But anyway, she's terribly, horribly, despicably wonderful in this movie. And all the actors are really great. And it's a cool little piece of history that a lot of us remember. And it's really neat to kind of see the perspective behind some of that story. But anyway, there's a moment in the story where Tonya is going out with this guy who she ends up marrying, Jeff Galooly. And her mom is talking to them, basically grilling him and, you know, trying to run him off or scare him away. And she starts talking about this concept that in all relationships, there's a gardener and a flower. Which one are you? And if you are going to be in a relationship with a flower, such as her daughter, Tonya, who's this rock star skating personality and a, you know, an Olympic celebrity. If you're going to be with somebody like that, then you need to be a gardener and you need to be aware that that's the dynamic in your relationship. And so, I've spent a lot of time like thinking about that concept, and I think there is some basic truth in that concept. And one of the things that really strikes me as I look at my relationships is, if you ask me when I'm not in a relationship, theoretically, I would kind of say I'm honestly a little bit more of a flower. I'm very much, you know, about my work, and my identity is public. And so, you know, I have a big personality. I have some creative madness and all the kind of drama and angst that goes along with that. And I've said many times, I don't need to be with another creative person, you know, because there's not enough room for all of that melodrama. And that I really do kind of instinctively crave a partner who is grounded and a little bit more of a homebody, someone who does a lot of laid back, cool, powerful, magic things like cooking, you know, which I consider a creative art and a really important nurturing, healing ability. But it's very much in balance to the way that I spend my creative energy. And so I was thinking about the fact that, yeah, you know, I kind of need to admit that I'm a flower. And here's the problem. When I'm in a relationship, I'm also something of a gardener. My professional role as an intuitive is a bit of more of a gardener in the situation when I'm in a session with someone. I've often said it's about making their issues and their questions and their problems and their focus and their dreams the point. You know, maybe it's for an hour, but for that hour, that is the center of my universe as well. I am making whatever their concerns are my concerns. And so, and I do feel that I am a healer and a nurturer and a teacher and all of that in a professional kind of context. And so for years and years and years, before I started doing this professionally, I had a tendency to do this within my relationships. And I would end up in a lot of codependent situations or situations where I was coaching people or trying to enable and cheerlead them. And it really didn't work in that area of my chart. But as soon as I moved that part of my personality to a different area, an outlet, more of a professional context, it has a different power and ability. I'm able to do it for thousands of people as opposed to just kind of spending it in one place where it, like, there's not room for it or something. So, you know, I was contemplating all this stuff and thinking about what's interesting is that in a relationship, I automatically switch gears and try to be a gardener, even though really I'm kind of a flower, and I only need to be a gardener when it's kind of like my work self. In my personal life, I need a gardener, you know? And so I was just wondering, I wanted to put the concept out to you guys and let you think about that. Is there some truth to it? And can you be really honest with yourself? Which one are you? I don't think that it automatically means that, you know, everybody should be a flower and that's the most desirable role to be. We all have a little bit of both in us, but in a specific context, in the context of a personal relationship or marriage, which one are you? So I'm thinking about that a lot, and it kind of changes my perspective on who I look at and how I see them and how I see myself. So I'm thinking about it, whether or not I believe in the gardener and the flower. One other thing, I don't even want to talk about this, but I can't not mention it because it's been so heavy, hardcore, last few weeks, just ramping up, getting worse and worse. And here within the last 24 hours, it's just really come to a head. Situation, the southern border of the United States with this new policy of separating children and infants from their parents seeking asylum and incarcerating them. And, you know, I did an entire episode about how I feel about politics and about talking about politics publicly. I don't post political stuff on Facebook. I don't really engage in a lot of conversations there, though I do comment sometimes on other people's conversations. But You know, the thing is that this was already like a thing that I couldn't quite let go of. And I didn't talk to my mom about it for a couple weeks because I knew it would freak her out. And she told me this morning that she said, I can't even sleep. I can't even sleep because I'm thinking about that. And I said, you know, I'm finding it really hard to focus. I mean, here I am. It's like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I usually record in the mornings. And it's because I've been so unable to focus and honestly unable to breathe. The thing that really stopped my breath yesterday was watching members of the administration, the Attorney General of the United States, the White House communications director, using biblical scripture quotes to justify laws and to tell us that we're supposed to obey whatever it is that they want to do. I lost my freaking mind. And there is no way that I'm going to display that side of my personality on this podcast. But for those of you who are wondering, you know, what I might think about this, and, you know, because I don't speak about it, I do have to say the fundamentalist religious bullshit, if you want to bring that on the court, all bets are off. I don't consider that politics. I consider that fundamentalist religious bullshit. And that is something that I feel extremely impassioned to speak about. And I'm not going to fill this podcast. This podcast is not going to become some Rush Limbaugh of, you know, like Christian bashing or something like that. I'm not going to go there because I don't want to carry that energy. But I do need to let you know, for those of you who are resisting, that this is a line in the sand for me. This is one of those red lines that they talk about. We're just not going to live in a theocracy. The American Taliban is not going to happen. The Dominionists and the right-wing fundamentalist Christians are not going to happen. The whole term white evangelicals offends me simply because what they really are is white supremacists. And so let's just call it that. And anyway, I can't breathe. I'm so angry. I'm so angry. And I just need you to know that I'm angry if you're angry too. And that we should be angry about this. And this is one of those things that I think really just, I keep thinking the bottom's going to drop, and it drops, and then it drops again, and then there's another bottom. You know, it just keeps getting lower and lower and deeper in the swamp over there. But this is not the Republic of Gilead, you know. No way. It's not happening. It's not going to happen. So I did want to take a moment and call that out. It's too big of a thing this week for me not to mention in kind of personal news, because there is nothing bigger in this moment for me as a person, as a human being on this planet than that. And so, yeah, I have the feeling, though, the reason why I'm speaking about this is I know that the vast majority of you are also unable to breathe right now. And so I just needed to let you know that I feel you. And we're going to take a moment and breathe. Before I forget, I want to say a quick thank you to my newest supporters on Patreon, Lisa, who came in at the mastery level. We had a really fantastic conversation by email through the Patreon messaging system about how the podcast is impacting her. She said that she's admittedly way, way, way back in the spiritual closet, so I'm going to only use her first name. Lisa, you know who you are. Thank you for listening, for the support, for your emails about how the episode are affecting you and what the show means to you. It makes my day to get an email like that from someone. And as much as I feel like I'm sitting here sometimes in a vacuum staring at a little bar on my screen advance, there are a lot of you that are, you know, real people who are really invested and participating in that show, and it means the world to me. Tina Wisnant edited her pledge up to the mastery level. level. And that's always a huge compliment, because I know it's a little bit of trouble to go and, you know, find the link and track it down and actually change it to express that you like it even more than your other pledge expressed. So very much appreciative of that. And I also just want to say thank you to Theo, a female Theo, by the way, for her wonderful testimony about the show. So get this, you guys. Theo really likes to listen to soothing kind of talk radio stuff in the background while she sleeps. And she told me that she downloaded every single one of the MP3s of this show, and she plays them in the background to help her go to sleep and as she sleeps. And oh, by the way, this is one of the reasons why I ended up texting Seth on Monday with the Trust Me, I'm a Wizard, because many, many years ago, Seth was the very first person who ever said that listening to me was like listening to NPR. He used to like for me to talk to him while he fell asleep, which, by the way, is very challenging to one's ego to have someone go to sleep in the middle of your conversation. But he foresaw that quality. I don't know. I think of myself as being kind of a manic speaker and stuff, so I don't hear it. But it's funny because Theo and Seth are not the first people to tell me that, you know, that my voice has that kind of effect on them. And so it's just really cool. Again, another synchronicity. That's really the reason why I reached out to him in the first place and, you know, was like sending him messages on the wind, was because Theo sent me her message about how she likes to fall asleep to my voice. And I was like, oh my God, Seth is going to die when he hears that. So anyway, I appreciate all of you who've pledged your support at any level. I'm really excited to see the new names each week. It demonstrates that you're enjoying the show and you want it to continue. That's really encouraging to me. You can hear it in my voice, so thank you. I've been praying for like the last 2 years for some kind of guidance about how to scale my business. My schedule fills up with people wanting readings and with my mentoring students and automatic intuition. And trust me, that's a great problem to have. I'm very grateful. But there's a limit to how many sessions I can do in a week or a month. And I don't want to scale my business by simply raising my prices over and over again. I don't want to talk to only 10 people who just happen to have the disposable income to afford talking to me. I want to talk to tens of thousands of people. So this podcast and your support on Patreon is scalable. This is where my creative energy is. It's where your energy as a collaborator is. And the coolest thing about it, it's the same work, the same process, the same amount of time, the same conversation, whether 1,000 of you listen or 10,000 or 100,000. This is what we can take out there and share on a bigger and bigger scale. This perspective, this fewer hearts and flowers filter on the spirituality conversation in the world. You are helping me do that. So thank you. Listeners who support the show on Patreon can access a guided meditation called Messages from Your Spirit Guides, exclusive bonus episodes, and there's also a mastery level of support where you can download one of my courses for free each month. And this month, the featured course is Reach More, Teach More. It's a continuation of the tool that I shared last month with Automatic Author. I know a lot of you listening are my fellow creative peers and authors and teachers and speakers. You're working on your own passion projects. And this tutorial is a module from my graduate level professional intuitive business mentoring, Beyond Readings. The scale issue I just talked about affects everyone working in a one-to-one capacity. This tutorial, Reach More, Teach More, will help you plan passive income streams. And that was the real game changer for me at a major milestone. It's what allowed me to take being a professional intuitive and author from part-time side hustle to full-time income. And I'm very happy to share that with you. So to find out how you can become a patron, support my time in producing this show, and access all the extra bonus content, please go to patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. That's patreon.com/shiftyourspirits. Oh, and one quick note. During the recording of this next segment, the sky opened up and poured rain, and you may hear that in the background. It's not static or crappy equipment on my end or your earbuds. It's actually just rain. You may not even notice it. It's not that major, but it is there. So if you hear it, I'm sorry. Blame it on the rain. I like houses with ghosts. I prefer them. Where else does the largest chunk of all that charm and character come from, if not from spirit energies? But it seems a lot of people react to the presence of any spirit as a negative spirit, and in my opinion, that's just not necessarily the case. When I moved into the house I shared with my brother in 2003, the house on Daniel, I had not yet begun to make the distinctions that you find me writing and speaking about now, like the differences between ghosts and spirit guides and angels. I only observed that among the population of the invisible were those that came and went, those that came with the locations they inhabited, and those that came along with us, attached to us personally like parents or pets. My awareness of these subjects had only just shifted to conscious. The Daniel house is where I moved right after my encounters with Jesse, who I told you about in the episodes called Stranger Angels. Daniel is where I took those first steps that led ultimately to my communicating and working with spirit guides. And that's the arc of my personal history I'm recounting in these paranormal memoirs. The Daniel House represents a bridge in memory and experience from the haunted greenhouse of my childhood. Living with my brother again as an adult seems to have either drawn new phenomena to me or plugged me back in and turned up the volume. Gray little black shuttered Daniel came with great potential for ghosts and residual energy. It was built in the 1930s in a middle-class inner-city neighborhood with the timid room dimensions of that pessimistic time. It wasn't the oldest house I've ever lived in, but it was the oldest house I spent a lot of nights in alone, listening and expecting. Part of the promise of ghosts at Daniel came with the finished walk-up attic, an upper half-story with dormer windows and a permanent steep staircase behind a door at the back of the house. The ceiling height of the attic would have been irresistible to children, and sure enough, the first time the leasing agent walked me through the house, he semi-apologized for the scribbles on the attic walls. Names printed in little kid scrawl, a few broken wax crayons, paper labels peeled off, stomped into the cracks between the floorboards. The murky window light, like that of an abandoned terrarium. How many spooky movies and horror novels begin with delicious little moments of foreshadowing just like this? Since it was the last room he showed me, the realtor had no way of knowing how much more the possibility of a kid-haunted attic appealed to me than the refinished wood floors and the upgraded appliances, the new energy-efficient water heater and the central heat and air. And there was no telling what all that renovation might have awakened. The plan was that by sharing the house, my brother and I could both take advantage of the best of multiple worlds. For my brother, who spent more time on the road touring with bands than at home, the arrangement would allow him to get rid of an expensive storage facility and still have some place to come home to without having to maintain an apartment on his own. For me, well into my 30s, beyond any lingering tolerance for collegiate roommate situations, yet not financially stable enough to live alone in a city as expensive as Atlanta, cohabitating with my mostly absent brother would mean quasi-living alone. I could enjoy reduced expenses, the place mostly to myself, and yet have an actual family member I could count on not to screw me over in one of those many ways that roommates can. I know he didn't love the arrangement or benefit from it quite as much as I did, but the timing was right for both of us. He needed to go off on tour again in a hurry. I was moving back to town and starting a new job within a matter of days. With windows of opportunity as small as our overlapping circumstances, Daniel was serendipitous. The first time I showed the place to my brother, he wanted to investigate the shed out behind the house and compare it to the size of the attic. The lawn had just been mowed by the realty company in anticipation of our move-in date, and we noticed this large rectangular depression in the yard beyond the back patio slab. My theory is they used to have a carport or something back here, I said. My brother squinted, his cheeks pulled back in a wince. Looks like a bomb shelter to me. Standing over the concave depression, he looked like he felt queasy. They've obviously buried the entrance, though. Now, I've already told you I believe he is one of the most psychically sensitive people I know, but also the most uncomfortable with it. He never talks about the paranormal in the present tense at all, although he will refer matter-of-factly and with great detail to our shared past experiences when we were kids. He was a statue of second thoughts, staring down between his feet with a frown at the faint footprint of that forgotten underground room. I half expected him to deliver an early in the spooky movie line like, "I have a bad feeling about this," or, "Wait, did you hear that?" He muttered something fairly close. "No telling what's under this yard." My brother's reactions in reality will probably always be a disappointment compared to my magical worldview. Still, I decided to downplay his first exploration of the attic. I lingered back on the stairs, not unlike how the realtor had positioned himself when he'd shown it to me, offering dismissive responses and body language that said, "Whatever, nothing to see here. Let's go back down." I don't know if my brother spotted the children's drawings on the wall in the corner. He only pronounced the attic's security as a favorable place to store his expensive surplus sound equipment. He left to go rent a U-Haul. Before moving anything into the house, I performed a ritual walkthrough to introduce myself to the ghosts, to map any active vortex or portal in etheric dimensions coinciding with the physical space. I prefer to wait and call the archangels into their protective posts at the four corners of the property later, after I'm all moved in, like a lid or a seal or a deadbolt, a moat around me and mine. Once the keys are yours, it's hard to resist bringing something in with you on that first visit to a new place. You think, why waste a trip over without throwing a few things in the trunk? Does it make any sense when you can easily predict just how sick you'll be in the next day or so of all the carrying boxes back and forth? But an empty house is like that pause between breaths in yoga. The moment that it's neither inhaling or exhaling, the midpoint of the swing free from gravity, neither kicking up toward the sky or dropping back down to earth. Some of the greatest sources of power can only be found in between things, and most people feel a need to hurry through that unnerving discomfort, as minor as a dash through the rain without an umbrella between the car and the front porch overhang. The stillness of the in-between can be peaceful, or its silence can be deafening, depending on your personal comfort with sustaining a sense of timelessness, of nowhere, of nothing, of namelessness. This moment is rife with magic. You only get one such moment per move. Once you bring in your pets, your thoughts and emotions, your friends and family, your personal belongings steeped in your energy, the spirits have already started shifting, ink dropped in water, smoke torn and curled by your breezing in. When I first move into a house, I don't smudge right away, or sage, as in its verb form, to burn sage, because I have this theory. So let me interrupt here for a second with an apologetic parenthetical aside / disclaimer before I tell you my theory about smudging. This is just a belief or behavior, really, based on personal observation. I know it's not the norm, and most people may not agree with this, and I would not doubt it for a second if you told me there's a traditional Native American shaman in a famous 1970s commercial somewhere with a big fat tear sliding down his cheek as he casts his gaze out over the way I have gutted and bent shamanic tools and techniques to my own eclectic 21st century mixed Anglo-Cherokee, neo-pagan, postmodern creative magical practice. My theory is that smudging sedates spirits, much like smoking subdues a hive of bees. To clarify further, smudging clears energies. It does not necessarily clear entities. It doesn't get rid of anyone. It just might make them stoned, pliable, sleepy, unmotivated. Maybe they get the munchies, and so if you know it's not mice or really big cockroaches or a roommate with an Ambien-induced sleep eating problem, then that's probably why you're hearing the rustle and the ruckus in the kitchen cabinets late at night. Who's to say the things that go bump don't dig a fatty smudge bundle just as much as your deceased Aunt Clara, your childhood fairy companion Serafina, or your guardian angel Fanciel? You know, I'm pretty sure sage smudge is a southwestern thing anyway. My life stories take place in either Tennessee or Georgia. We certainly don't use southeastern tobacco in anything close to a traditionally reverent way. My point is, it's all bastardization, cultural appropriation, and customization. Many of my theories and practices exist under a canopy of personalization, that your beliefs and your intentions literally create the power, the force, the degree, the volume, and the outcome of any ritual. Take it, tweak it, make it work for you. A medium friend of mine, one of those guys you typically see accompanying paranormal investigators on those ghost hunting shows, taught me this basic ritual for establishing a working cohabitation contract with any self-aware spirit entities who are bound to a specific location. Spirits may be attached to your house without being technically earthbound. Earthbound is an undesirable state of purgatory where the spirit is trapped and unable to cross over due to trauma, confusion, obsession. Much more common are benevolent spirits dropping by a beloved past home in visitation. Someone may have loved this house before you did. Obviously, this is especially true with an older house. The original owner may have also been its creator. He may have designed and built it to very personal specifications. It may have represented the single largest financial investment in his entire life. His wife may have given birth to children in this house, or at the very least, it's the place where they were raised. Some members of the home's original family may have died in the house, not tragically, but as they wished. There can be enormous positive emotional attachments between spirits, memories, and places. When you first walk through the space as part of your introductory ritual, listen for that history. Sense those personal stories. Recognize those who have gone there before you. Honor their lives and respect their experiences. This should be the foundation on which your own life story will be overlaid. You are a new layer. It's a palimpsest. In the eye blink of the present, your breath, your thoughts, your emotions, your energy are scribbled on the walls of the past of all those who have walked here before you. We called this contract, this ritual, this spell, this game, really, a penny charm in that obvious childlike manner with which such things tend to be named. The basic gist of a penny charm is that before you move any of your belongings into the home, you greet the spirits who dwell there, you introduce yourself, explain who you are, how you intend to share the space, how you wish to interact with them, you ask for their blessing, and invite them to provide security for you and yours. If the spirits accept you as a new member of the family and agree to let you reside in their house unmolested, they will leave a coin or coins on the floor. The coin, usually a penny, will appear close to a door or window. Sometimes it may actually appear on the windowsill. You should express your thanks to the spirits and place the penny on the top of the closest door or window frame. The trim around a standard door or window will comfortably hold a small coin, disguising it from view. The protection's not literal. It's not only active on a particular door as a physical lock or deadbolt might be. All physical and non-physical pathways into and through the space should be theoretically covered. I've observed that the penny's placement might have something to do with energetic or spiritual portals more than physical openings. If you do find multiple coins as a result of the spell, just place them individually according to the best, closest corresponding door or window, or spread them around the house. It's your ritual. Follow your instincts. The penny acts as a symbolic charm of protection. The coin itself has no power. It represents the signed contract that the spirits have agreed to provide protection to the best of their abilities in the dimensions which they can affect. fully expect the penny to eventually vanish. Shortly after placing it above a door or window, you may remember the charm and check to see if it's still there. At some point, you'll forget about it, and this is when it ultimately disappears. Then again, months or even years later, the coin may still be there. Who knows? Both situations have happened to me. What if you've already been living in your home for some length of time? Can you still do this spell? I've moved around a lot as a renter, so I've had lots of opportunities to do this from day one. I don't see any reason why you can't or shouldn't perform this spell right now if you want to. A couple of things I would advise. If it ain't broke, don't worry about fixing it. I also can't help but wonder how many of you, if you go feeling around the tops of your doors and windows, might discover these kinds of coins or talisman already in place. If you find something there and you're not experiencing negative haunting issues, I'd assume that this is someone else's charm and it's still active, and leave it alone or put it back. If it makes you feel better before returning a found coin that you suspect is already an active charm, you could always ask the spirits to amend the contract to include you. If you really want to ensure that the pennies you find are indeed charms or messages left by ghosts, sweep first. Sweeping ups the challenge level, but it also takes the doubt away. Unless your home is new construction, you'll nearly always find those last dustpan piles left behind by the vacating human occupants. Those coins don't count. You know they don't, so start your ritual with a clean floor. Sweeping is, in my opinion, one of the most multi-purpose, practical, functional, and productive spiritual activities you can engage in, excepting, of course, exercise. Yes, vacuuming is the obvious alternative if you have carpet. I sweep daily, not only the obvious places like the kitchen, but also the sidewalk, the driveway, the curb at the street. I'm sure the neighbors driving by think I'm obsessive compulsive. When I'm in my senior years, stooped and ancient, I'll hopefully pass for eccentric and a bit anachronistic, one of those little old people. For everyday sweeping spells, I use a trusty full-size industrial manufactured but still natural fiber straw broom. But for rituals, such as the penny charm contract, I go full-on handmade besom. I've had my besom since the mid-1970s. It looks like it came straight out of the props collection for a Lorena McKinnon album cover photo shoot. I swept through the rooms of Daniel, prattling on out loud to whatever spirits might be present. I talked to them just as I would one of my new living neighbors. I've always experienced satisfying results from informal, improvisational rituals. Formal prayers scripted by other people or choreography out of books feels a little fake to me, and that kind of self-consciousness is a red flag indicating a lack of authenticity, and therefore the true power may be diminished. I left the house and returned the next day with my first carload of stuff. On the long drive back into the city, I kept picturing where I was most likely to find a coin waiting for me. I hurried through the front entry and past the living room. A quick raking glance in either direction assured me that those boards were still bare. As I anticipated, I discovered the coin in the dining room at the back of the house, about 12 inches in front of the door with the stairs leading up to the attic. I was still convincing myself it was indeed there, a dull, rusted penny, even a heartbeat or two after spotting it. I picked it up to see what year it was, 1973. Wouldn't it have been cool if it could have been 1969, you know, the year of my birth? Already the stuff of stories, the symmetry of that detail was probably too much to ask for, but it did occur to me that my brother was born in 73. Maybe they were drawn to him more than me. He's more naturally sensitive. Ghosts, pets, babies have always found him instantly approachable. Maybe he'd even been by the Daniel house last night since I performed the spell and spoke to them, unknowingly or not. I placed the coin on top of the sill on that most obvious of doorways and thanked the spirits for accepting us into their home. Well, there it is, I thought. I can officially move in now. I went out to my car and brought the first box into the back bedroom. There was another penny by the closet door. minted in the late 1990s. Nothing exceptional about that. This closet was actually the underside of the staircase to the attic, the same space reached from a door on the other side. And the most logical places for our two desktop computers were in the spots where the coins had been found. And this proved to be a very significant part of the story. Let's pause this here for now. I know you want to go check above your doors and windows for coins and maybe try the penny charm out for yourself. The rest of the story is a little long, especially if I keep going and tell the whole thing in one sitting. So I'm going to come back in the next episode and tell you about the more profound communications with spirits that happened to me at the house at Daniel. Thanks again for listening to the Shift Your Spirits podcast. For show notes, links, transcripts, and all the past episodes, please visit shiftyourspirits.com. You can subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or whatever app you use to access podcasts. If you'd like to get an intuitive reading with me or download a free ebook and meditation to help you connect with your guides, please go to sladeroberson.com. And if you're interested in my professional intuitive training program, you can start the course for free by downloading the attunement at automaticintuition.com. Before I go, I promise to leave you a message and answer to a question or a concern you may have. So take a moment to think about that. Hold it in your mind or speak it out loud. I'll pause for just a few seconds right now. How are you on following through? Are you planning and thinking about doing things, implementing cool new big ideas, or are you actually executing and sticking with the necessary actions of what you've already begun? Are you working through the rough patches? That's the most important skill set to master, especially right now at the stage that you're at. This week, be really honest with yourself about your follow through, your completion. Don't start anything new until you evaluate the loose ends you've got lying around. Those will trip you up. Take care of them, and I'll talk to you later.